Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A record 65 million people are currently displaced globally as the world marks Refugee Day. In Ghana, Congolese refugees are struggling to survive.
They went to the refugee board. The refugee board decided not to accommodate them. So they came to perch in front of our house, my house. And what they are going through is very alarming. It's inhuman.
Kenya's opposition coalition CORD has cancelled countrywide demonstrations that have been taking place on Mondays.
We have shown goodwill, and this is not the first time that we are suspending these demonstrations to give room for constructive dialogue. We hope that by this week, the process should begin.
Just some of the stories we've lined up for you. Good morning, and glad you could join me on DW's Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideo in Bonn, Germany.
Top story.
65 million, that's the number of people who have been displaced worldwide, according to the United Nations. And as nations commemorates World Refugee Day today, much of the world's attention is focused on the Syrian refugee crisis. But 86% of the world's refugees are hosted by developing countries. One of these countries is Ghana, where, as Isaac Kaleji reports in Accra, Congolese refugees who escaped conflict are struggling to survive.
I am in Jowolo district in central Accra. I am greeted by some 20 refugees from the Republic of Congo who are seeking asylum in Ghana. While these refugees wait for help, they have had to sleep in the open at the mercy of rain and animals, begging for food from residents here to survive. They look very dejected. I met a Congolese national who is here to help these refugees. She wants to be called Tracy and interprets what the leader of the refugees, Dimba Faustin, has been telling me.
Je dis je suis réfugié. J'ai quitté Brazzaville pour venir demander l'asile ici au Ghana.
It's Congolese. They are refugees. They came here for because in our country there was fighting. That's why they came here.
Refugee board nous avait dit après avoir nous a donné les attestations, mais nous attendons, on ne sait pas là où ils peuvent nous mettre. Nous attendons qu'ils puissent trouver un endroit pour nous placer.
They gave them attestation, so they are still waiting from that.
Il y a des gens de bonne volonté qui nous aident. Je pense qu'on se regarde les enfants. Ah, vous êtes des réfugiés. S'ils ont quelque chose, ils nous remettent. C'est comme ça que nous vivons.
They say that people help them to eat and other things.
The leader of the refugees, who is 52, has brought his wife and children with him. They are forced to sleep in abandoned cars in the area to avoid being attacked by snakes and other animals. Faustin says political unrest back home makes it difficult for them to return, and they will do all they can to remain in Ghana. The refugees have been here for more than 1 month now, and their presence in this vicinity seems to be a cause of concern for residents. One of them, Gordon, told me why.
I am a resident here, and I've witnessed what is going on around here. They went to the refugee board. The refugee board decided not to accommodate them, so they came to perch in front of our house, my house. And what they are going through is very alarming. It's inhuman. Because if rain comes, they stay in the rain with these small, small kids. They sleep under untreated mosquito nets.
So why is the refugee board taking so long to assist these refugees while checking their claims and then either granting them asylum or repatriating them? Those are the questions I put to the executive secretary of the board, Kofi Anani.
Normally the practice is to provide temporary shelter, food and clothing to people seeking asylum. That is under the international convention. Currently our transit centers are full. And at the moment we are facing a serious resource constraint. And we don't have that immediate resources to be able to provide them with the immediate support that they need.
Mr. Anani says the government's partners don't have enough funds to support operations. That means until help comes, these refugees, whose numbers continue to grow, will be left to their fate.
Isaac Kalechi reporting in Accra. From West Africa, let's head east, where the war in Yemen has forced thousands to flee across the sea to Djibouti. Some of them still live in a refugee camp outside the remote town of Obok. Yemen is caught up in a proxy war being waged between Saudi Arabia, supporting Yemen's government forces, and Iran, backing the Houthi rebels, who, according to the Yemeni in the camp, have committed the most and worst atrocities. One church volunteer in Djibouti is trying to deliver more than just practical assistance. She's giving the refugees a chance to get an education despite the harsh conditions. This report by James Jeffrey is now presented by Philip Sandner.
As the sun sets over the refugee camp outside the small town of Obok, Yemeni children giggle among themselves and make various noises as they hesitantly approach and pet a group of camels idling in a sandy lane running between groups of tents. The camels will remain residents of the camp until the end of Ramadan, when they'll be slaughtered for the celebratory feast of Eid al-Fitr. Many settled in a refugee camp that grew outside Obok, an inhospitable sun-parched corner of the Horn of Africa, in spite of the sea's proximity. Facilities in the camp remain basic, though they now include a school, started single-handedly by American missionary Marianne Vecchione to provide Yemeni children and young adults with education, as well as something more intangible.
It's affected people in the camp on three levels. It's first the individual, that each individual student matters, and that they have a value. Each student has a value to be educated and to have a future, and that they're worth investing in as individuals. And then as families, it gives them a chance to have hope in their future as a family.
With daily temperatures of about 100 degrees Fahrenheit and more, the refugees from all over the country are housed in tents, from poor fishermen to relatively affluent professionals of the middle class. One of the refugees at the camp is 18-year-old Issa Ali, who volunteers as a teacher. Together with his mother and five siblings, they sought refuge at the camp after his father was killed by a military plane's bomb strike. The family lived a modest life in Sana'a, Yemen's capital.
It's affected me a lot because my house and school were destroyed by the war, and I even lost my father. I lost everything. It's possible I might go back to Yemen. My future used to be in Yemen when I had a father with an income. But if we go back, it's going to be hard. We'll be starting from scratch. Before, we depended on ourselves. But how do we do that now? I don't think we can do it.
The camp, at its peak, had about 3,000 people. Now there are about 1,000. Refugees have started returning to Yemen, but some still remain at the camp for their own safety.
There is nothing like home, where you had your childhood, your home. Even if you are somewhere better, you can't compare with it. We also miss the traditions, the parks, the mosques and culture. We miss everything, the breath and waves of Yemen, the beautiful skies. We even look at the map at where we used to live. We even miss the shopkeepers, as that meant daily life.
Djibouti's government comes in for criticism for not doing enough to help large numbers of unemployed and impoverished in the country. But the influx of Yemeni refugees into Djibouti has totaled about 35,000, which, relative to the size of Djibouti's population, is like 13 million people entering the U.S., according to the U.S. ambassador to Djibouti, Tom Kelly.
I think it's important that the world knows that the refugee problem isn't just a problem for Europe. It's a problem faced by countries all over the world. It's not widely known that countries like Djibouti and Ethiopia and Kenya house so many refugees. I think proportionally a lot more than many European countries.
And that report was written by James Jeffrey. We apologize for that last sound that was technically a bit poor.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Demonstrations put on pause. Kenya's opposition has once again called off Monday's protest against the Electoral Commission. The court coalition, led by former Prime Minister Raila Odinga, says it wants to give dialogue with the government a chance. This comes as a number of lawmakers from both the ruling Jubilee coalition and the opposition COD were freed on bond after being charged with hate speech. James Chimanyula brings us more details from Nairobi.
Announcing the cancellation of the demonstrations which have been held for five consecutive weeks, one of COD leaders, Senator James Orengo, briefly explained why they decided to take such a move.
We have shown goodwill, good faith, and this is not the first time that we are suspending these demonstrations to give room for constructive dialogue. And therefore, we hope that with this space that we have given, by this week, the process should begin. As we speak, we do not have any document or any position paper on what Jubilee intends to handle this dialogue.
The dialogue that Orengo is speaking about revolves around round-table discussions to pave the way for legal ways of removing Kenya's Electoral Commission from office without going through Parliament, as stipulated by the Constitution. The opposition COD has given the government 2 days to announce a date for the eagerly awaited dialogue that will see an end to demonstrations that have, over the past 2 months, caused the death of at least six people and left hundreds of others with serious injuries. As the opposition led by Raila Odinga waits for the government to meet its members, Francis Kaparo, chairman of Kenya's National Cohesion and Integration Commission, has decried the upsurge in hate speeches made by politicians, which he says have been uttered over and over again with impunity.
I think impunity from wherever source must be dealt with. It must go away. People should be able to answer for their own acts or omissions as individuals. And courts should be given the respect it deserves to carry out the business of adjudicating disputes without being unduly harassed.
Kaparo's remarks come shortly after eight Kenyan politicians were charged with hate speech and incitement to violence following public comments and calls to supporters made in recent days. They were later granted bail. One of them, Junet Mohammed from the opposition, explained his arrest.
Intimidation, part of making sure that the opposition is dead quiet in this country. Police officers were telling us that there are serious instructions from above. You should not be given food, water. You should not be given any services at all. You can't change clothes. These issues of incitement and hate speech are being used to silence people. So the best thing is to keep quiet now.
And that report was compiled by James Chimanyula in Nairobi. It's been nearly 25 years since Somalia fell into anarchy and lawlessness after the fall of Siad Barre. Although the African Union-backed peacekeeping force AMISOM has been active for the last 9 years, it has so far failed to deter the Al-Qaeda-affiliated Al-Shabaab Islamists. The armed insurgents continue to stage deadly attacks in Somalia and beyond its borders. It's against such a background that DW's Conflict Zone program will this week feature Somalia's Prime Minister, Omar Abdirashid Ali Sharmake. He will talk about his country's quest for progress amid security challenges. We will air his interview on Tuesday, so don't miss out. For now, though, here's another segment on the migration series, A Learning by Ear production.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Greetings and welcome to Learning by Ear. We are on the second episode of our radio drama, The Promised Land, a story of African migration to Europe. In the first episode, we caught a glimpse of the lives of four young people. Farahani, who lives in North Africa and dreams of migrating to Europe. Sule, his friend. Chivasi, a young man from another African country who has just finished university. And finally, Linda, Chivasi's fiancée, who faces a difficult decision. We were also introduced to Linda's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Maraga, who are spending all their savings to send Linda to Europe to study international law. Where will the story take us? Keep listening to find out in today's episode, Different Routes, Same Destination. We begin with Linda being interviewed for her student visa by an embassy official.
Miss Linda Maraga.
2 days.
Linda Maraga, last call.
Me, I'm here. I'm sorry, miss. She came
just the other day. Miss Maraga, this is not a hotel room. Please, follow me.
Yes, miss. I'm sorry about that, miss.
Are you sick, Miss Maraga?
No, miss. It's just that the queue was so long that I had to sleep outside the embassy compound to be sure of getting an interview. I didn't sleep very well.
More and more people are applying for visas every year. You can imagine how much work that makes for us. So, why do you want to go to my country?
To study.
To study?
Yes.
And what precisely are you going to study?
I'll be studying international law. Everything is here in the...
I know what's in your file, Miss Maraga. Just answer my questions, please.
Yes, ma'am.
Couldn't you find a university here or in another African country that offers the same course? I imagine that would be much cheaper.
It's true that there are some, but they don't have the same prestige or reputation as those in Europe. If I get my degree in Europe, I stand a better chance of getting a well-paid job.
Who is paying for your tuition fees and accommodation?
My parents. They've already paid the tuition fee for the first term. And as for accommodation, I'll be living in the university students' hall of residence.
Your course lasts 3 years. Who will pay for the rest of it?
Well, my parents, I guess, since they're the ones who are sending me to study abroad.
You guess? Miss Maraga, this is not a guessing matter. I need to know for sure who will be responsible for your upkeep while you are in my country. What do your parents do for a living?
They're both civil servants.
Do you have any idea what their combined income is each month?
I'm not sure, miss. But the salary slips of both my parents...
I told you before. I've already gone through your file. I need you to answer my questions, Miss Maraga.
Yes, ma'am.
So you don't know how much your parents earn?
Miss... With all due respect, what my parents earn is really none of my business. I've never asked them and they've never told me.
Do you intend to come back here when you finish your studies?
Yes, I do.
How can I be sure that if I give you a visa, you won't overstay it?
Because I'm engaged.
Oh, really? Congratulations. When is the wedding, Miss Maraga?
After I finish my studies, miss.
Good. Well... That will be all. I will give you a visa, Miss Maraga.
Wow.
But first, you have to pay the standard charge of 60 euros.
Yes, ma'am.
You need to go and see the cashier and she will give you a receipt.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, congratulations on your engagement and good luck with your studies.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ask anyone who has applied for a visa to Europe and they'll tell you how tough it was. Huge numbers of applicants are rejected. But this doesn't stop people trying. Linda's one of the lucky ones. Just as she's leaving the embassy full of joy and expectation, elsewhere in North Africa, Farahani is meeting up with his friend Sule. He has some news to tell him.
Farahani, you must be out of your mind.
Listen, Sule, it's the only thing left to do. Will you come with me or not?
I want to, but I'm scared. Aren't you scared, Farahani?
Scared? Scared of what? We've got nothing to lose. But if we make it, we have everything to gain.
You're sure this will work?
No, I'm not sure, Sule. But we should at least try. If we get caught, it's just back to square one.
Let's take another route then. One that's not as risky. What you're proposing is very dangerous, Farahani.
The other routes are too well known. Just the other day, some migrants were caught in a boat off the European coast. And guess what?
They were shot.
No. They weren't shot. They can't just kill them. Migrants are not criminals. No, they were sent back.
Oh, now I get it. So you want to go under the radar, which is why you've chosen this new route. Very clever. And what about our families, relatives? Should we tell them?
We'll tell them when we are in Europe.
And what if we don't get there? What if we don't make it?
Then we'll have to keep on trying.
Farahani seems to have found a new way of sneaking illegally into Europe. But what exactly is his idea? Will he succeed? And will Sule go along with him, or will he change his mind? The saga continues. Meanwhile, Linda has picked up her visa and is now at home, showing it to her proud parents.
Oh, Linda, today you've made me a very proud mother.
And I'm a very proud father as well. Show me the visa again.
Dad, you've seen it so many times already. Okay, okay.
Linda Maraga, student visa. Validity 3 years. Multiple entry. What does multiple entry mean? Does it mean that we can travel to Europe on your visa as well?
No, Dad. It means I can use it several times to keep entering and leaving the country for as long as the visa is valid.
That's okay. A pity. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Linda, I've already booked a flight for you. You'll be leaving for Europe this weekend.
This weekend? Dad, I have so much to do. I have to go shopping, I have to pack, and say goodbye to...
Don't blame me. It was your mother's idea.
Yes, I'm so sorry, my dear. But we have to act very fast in case those people at the embassy change their minds. From what you told us, it's very possible.
Excuse me, I have to take this call in private.
Oh, no problem, my dear. Say hi to Chivasi and tell him he should come see us soon. It's been quite a while.
Hello? Chivasi, how have you been?
You want the truth or just a polite reply?
The truth, as always. I'm sorry I left like that the other day, but...
Forget it, Linda. Tell me, did you get a visa? A friend of mine who applied for a visa for Europe was refused recently. I hear they've become very strict nowadays.
Yeah, that's true. But I got my visa, Chivasi. And my parents just told me that I'm leaving for Europe this weekend.
What? You're kidding, right? This weekend is only a few days away.
I know, Chivasi. I'm so sorry. Lately, all I ever seem to do is say goodbye to you.
It's all right, Linda. I want you to know that I'm very happy for you. Extremely proud and happy for you.
Thanks, Chivasi. That means a lot coming from you.
So, does that mean we have to say our goodbyes now? Like this, on the phone?
No, actually, my mother has invited you to come and have a meal with us. And I would love to see you before I go. I have a confession to make.
Is it a good or a bad confession?
A good one, I think. A very good one.
Thank God. Okay, tell your mother that I'm honored to be invited. I'll come for supper tomorrow if that's okay with her.
Okay, so I'll see you tomorrow then.
And the end of Linda and Chivasi's phone call is also the end of the second episode of this radio drama called The Promised Land, A Story of African Migration to Europe. Now, Linda has her visa and her flight has been booked. But what awaits her in Europe? How will Chivasi cope with her departure? And on Africa's northern coast, will Farahani and Sule go through with their plan to migrate to Europe illegally? You'll hear the answers to this and much more in the upcoming third episode. Join us in our online discussion at facebook.com/dw.lbe to air your views on the various methods of legal and illegal migration. And remember that you can also listen to this episode again simply by visiting our webpage at dw.de/destinationeurope. Until we meet again, take care.
And just in case you missed out on that episode of The Promised Land, we shall air a repeat on Thursday. For now, here's a summary of our main stories. As the world marks Refugee Day, we've been hearing the plight of refugees in Ghana and Djibouti. And Kenya's opposition coalition, CORD, has cancelled countrywide demonstrations that were scheduled to take place today. Do send us your comments on stories we have aired, either via an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 491609575951 For more news on the continent, visit dw.com/Africa. I'm Crispin Mwakideu. I wish you a good day and week ahead.